Okay.
So what I want to do tonight is I want to finish the Rav Chaim that we started last week. We're actually not going to finish the entire piece. You don't even have the entire piece here. It goes on for several additional pages after the end of the Rav Chaim. But I actually want to use it as a springboard to talk about our more narrow topic of Edei Chasima and Edei Mesira. And then maybe we'll do perhaps one more shiur on a related issue before we move on. Before we move on to other topics, okay? So just where we left off, quite all right. Where we left off with the Rav Chaim was the following. We saw that the Rambam, we saw a principle that said, in general, Eidos needs to be delivered orally. We had a principle, Mipiem lo mipiksavam. Eidos cannot be delivered in writing. Eidos needs to be delivered verbally by the Eidim. That was the general rule, Mipiem lo mipiksavam. That's recorded in several instances in Shas. We saw the Gemara later in Maseches Gittin, on Daf Ayin Aleph, that mentions this principle. At the same time, we know that there is a principle called Shtar. And a Shtar, it seems to be Eidos in writing. That seems to be almost the definition of a Shtar. You have testimony, at least in the case of a shtar raya, which is going to be important for us in a moment, but many shtaros are a form of testimony that is put into writing. That's what a shtar is. So the question becomes, how do you navigate the tension between that general requirement of verbal testimony in Beis Din and this institution called shtar that we know exists and seems to fly in the face of that principle? So there are many, many different approaches in the Rishonim, but we saw the two polar extremes last week. One approach was Rabbeinu Tam, who says that if there's a tension between Mipiem Lo Mipiksavam and Shtar, we're going to limit the former. We're going to limit Mipiem Lo Mipiksavam. And if you recall, Rabbeinu Tam said that principle actually only applies to someone who is incapable of delivering verbal Eidos. What we call in Halacha an Ilaim, somebody who's nonverbal, somebody who can't communicate verbally, that person is excluded from written testimony, but once you can testify, once in theory you can, you need not actually do so, on the basis of the principle, Kol Arayi L'Bila Ein Bila Ma'akevespo. So, Tosa said that really, it's a very limited principle, and Piyam Lom Piksavam is limited to a very narrow and confined case. That was the approach of Rabbeinu Tam. The Rambam took the polar opposite approach. The Rambam says if we have this tension between Mipiem Lo Mipiksavam and Shtar, what are we going to limit according to the Rambam? We are going to limit Shtar. And the Rambam indeed comes along and says, all Shtaros are Mide Rabbanan. The Ramban challenged that Rambam and says, how can you claim all Shtaros are Mide Rabbanan? We have Get. We have Shtar Kiddushin. These are Shtaros that clearly work on a De'oraisa level. The Ramban highlights it just to give a dramatic example. The Ramban says, if you have a man and woman who marry through a Shtar Kiddushin, and then there is evidence, there's proof of infidelity, then there's capital punishment. That is the punishment for marital infidelity. And we don't say, their marriage was only midrabanan, Rambam, because all shtaros are midrabanan, and therefore there isn't going to be any punishment, because really the whole thing was a rabbinic marriage to begin with, and it only exists on a rabbinic level. So that was the Ramban's way of highlighting that clearly this shtar kiddushin is operating on a de'oraisa level. That was the question that was posed on the Rambam. Rav Chaim, in his analysis, notes that question itself really exists on two planes, which again, I only mention because Rav Chaim himself is going to bring it up. It exists on the level of Eidos Kiyum and Eidos Birur. There are two types of Eidos in Halacha, and we might actually discuss this in greater length next shiur. Next week, I'm going to be away. It's Memorial Day next Monday. I'm going to be away. Yet to be determined whether we reschedule for later in the week or just push to another week. I will, please God, keep everybody posted on that front. But our next shiur, maybe, I haven't decided yet, but maybe on the topic of Shtar Kiyum, Eidei Kiyum versus Eidei Birur. It really is more of a Kiddushin topic than a Gittin topic, but I think it is certainly important for Gittin as well, so we may do that topic. But in short, the distinction is as follows. Eidos L'Kiyum Adavar pertains to instances where Eidim, witnesses, are necessary for a halachic result to go into effect. The classic example being marriage, kiddushin. And when they call up the Eidei Kiddushin under the chuppah, those witnesses aren't just there to testify that indeed they are married. If the witnesses were not present, then they are not married. Even if he purchases the ring with his own money and it's worth a shava pruta, he says the harayat, puts it on her finger, they both come afterwards and say, hey, we both acknowledge that there was a marriage. If there are no witnesses there, Besdin turns to them and says, sorry Charlie, but you're not married. Sorry Sarah, you're not married. The kiddushin is not good unless there were witnesses present. That's called Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar. By contrast, when it comes to a loan, if I lend you money and no witnesses are present, It may not be wise of me to do so. It's going to be hard for me to extract that money. But are you obligated to pay me back? Is the loan effective? The loan is, of course, still an effective loan. The witnesses are there for proof. That's what we call a debiro or a deraya, that they are there to prove if on a later occasion I come forward and say, hey, you owe me money, and you say, oh, lahadam, lohayu dvar me'olam, I never seen you before in my life, I never borrowed money from you, then I'm going to want to call in those witnesses to testify that they indeed saw the transaction, they saw me lend you money, so that I can thereby extract the money that I'm owed, so that I can extract payment. But the loan is valid, and the chiyuv to pay back is valid, irrespective of whether or not witnesses are present. That's Eidos Kiyum and Eidos Birur. Those two levels of witnesses. And when it comes to a get, the witnesses that are signed on the get, and we're going to, again, highlight this more, Be'ezus Hashem, starting tonight, and maybe a little bit next week as well, they really serve both purposes. If you don't have any witnesses, then it's no good. That you need Eidos L'Kiyum Adavar. Now, is the Eide Kiyum on a get identical to the Eide Kiyum on a Kiddushin? Maybe not. Maybe yes, maybe no. But you do need some form of Eidos Kiyum. And she also needs it as Eidos Raya. If she goes to a Beis Din at some later point and wants to remarry, and the Beis Din says, oh, we know you were married before, what is she going to do? She's going to present the get as proof that that marriage was dissolved and that she can now remarry. So the Eidim are working on both planes, and the Ramban is pointing out, on both planes you need more than just a Dirabanan if this document is going to actually allow her to remarry. That's where we left off in Rav Chaim, and now Rav Chaim is going to try to answer this question.
And that's separate from the signatures? The Eidim that are signing is separate from those?
So we're going to get into the topic of Eidei Mesira versus Eidei Chasima, okay?
In a get, those are not the same?
Let's assume right now we are working with the signatories, the Eidei Chasima, okay? Because that's where the problem of Mipiyam Velo Mipi Ksavam comes in, right? Yeah. When they're not verbally expressing, hey, we were there to witness the handover, but rather we were just the only ones that are signed onto it, okay? Bear in mind.
Then they wouldn't need, so then a get given without Edim, you wouldn't have to witness the giving.
A get given without Edim, you would certainly need witnesses.
It would not require Edim.
Of course it would.
But what I was talking about, the Edim that are signing.
In a case where they are signed or where they're not signed?
They are signed.
In a case where they are signed on, okay, we're going to assume for now that that is sufficient. That is the Shita of the Rambam. It is not universally agreed upon, as we'll see when we get to tonight's Maariv Makomos. But that is the position of the Rambam. And that's why you have this problem, Mipiyam Velo Mipi Ksavam, because you don't have witnesses in Beis Din testifying that she was divorced. They're just signed onto the document. Okay?
I think what he's asking is it's sufficient to make it a get, but she's not divorced.
What do you mean? If she has the get in her hands...
Oh, no. Once she has the get. But he's, I think what you're asking...
No, I'm asking. It's a two-part thing,
right? Exactly.
It's a two-part thing. You have a get that's a good get.
It's a good get, but
then if it's handed over without any,
the Hasima is not a raya or anything.
Just because she has a signed get for her hand.
That is correct. So what I guess Ari and David are both pointing out is that just witnesses signed onto the get do not prove the Masira, do not prove the handover. Yet, nonetheless, when certainly according to Rabbi Meir, and according to some shittos, according to Rabbi Elazar as well, when she has the get, right, the Eidei Chasima will suffice, even if there were no Eidei Mesira. Now, how does that work if they never saw the handover of the get? That is a major question among the Rishonim and the Achronim. It's one that we're not really going to get into so much. But somehow it works. Somehow it works. In short, you know, it could either be some form of umdana, what we would call an anan sahadeh. In other words, we ask ourselves, how in the world did she get this get? Is it really likely that she broke into her husband's vault and stole the get? Extraordinarily unlikely. So what's the most likely thing that happened? It is that he handed it over, and that's sufficient for us to determine that she's divorced. That's one approach. That's the, broadly speaking, that we call it the approach of the nesivos. Okay? Alternately, part of the chiddush of shtar is that a shtar fills in some of the blanks of its own testimony. Which is, again, one of the larger shtar topics that I don't want to get into. But the way it's understood by some of the Achronim, and this is probably the approach of Rav Chaim, or what's widely understood to be Rav Chaim's approach, even though he doesn't really, as far as I know, he doesn't really explicate this, is that a shtar, even though the information in the shtar is just the language of the get itself, it's as if it testifies that it was handed over properly as well. Eidos on a shtar asserts the shtar's own proper execution and kashrus. Which is a pretty wild idea. But we have other instances of that as well. Like, for example, let's say let's say somebody comes along on the shtar and starts, say again, just to use a classic example, that says, witnesses come by and say that, oh, when the witnesses signed on that shtar, they were ketanim or anusim. That's a classic example that's given. Yeah. Oh, you see those signatures? When those witnesses signed it, they were 12 years old. So what do we say? Does that disqualify the shtar? So we tend to treat that as what we call tre utre, two conflicting groups of witnesses. Now I ask you, where is the conflict there? Some of them just signed on the content of the get, and then other witnesses are coming and saying they were 12 years old. They were not yet gedolim. So where how is it tre utre? Where's the conflict? So implicit, but that's not still, that's not two witnesses, AB, right?
No, but why would they even come? Why would it be a habamina to have two 12-year-olds sign it again?
Whatever the case may be, let's say anusim hayu, they were forced to do it, right? Let's say they forced them to do it. They wanted these signatures, they were reluctant to do it, they had questions about its kashras, and they forced them to do it. Whatever the case may be, right? Where the question becomes, where's the tre utre? Where are the two witnesses?
Testifies for itself.
So So if a shtar is in essence almost testifying on its own proper execution in kashrus, right, then you have the tre utre. So that is again one of the major topics in the larger world of shtaros. How does a shtar operate? Or how does it fill in the gaps? Which is essentially what you're pointing out, Ari, right? They're just signed on no? David, that's what you're pointing out. So how does it fill in the gaps, right?
That get is different than Mecha Chomemka.
But this could apply to other stars as well. In other words,
I could accept it because it's the Bachov who wrote the star. It was about the star says that the loan was made.
Okay.
But the star.
That's what we call Das HaMeschayev, an important concept.
It does not say that the divorce was made. It says that the husband wants the divorce.
Again, it says, but that's the same thing. But that's the same thing as a shtar kinyan on a piece of land. In other words, it's asserting that a transaction is taking place. But until there's a transfer of the shtar itself,
it asserts a transaction. But a shtar get does not assert a transaction.
Of course, it does. She's
will.
But in other words, but it's the same thing. In other words, in each case, again, I don't want to use the word transaction because of the connotations in the context of get, right? But if we're using the language of the Mishnah and Kiddushin, she's kona es atzma through the get. The same way there's a transfer in the legal status of the same thing applies to the shtar. If you're using the shtar as a kinyan, right, then it is the transfer of the shtar that effects the transfer of ownership. Right, so I think it is analogous, but in any event, how does a shtar again fill in those gaps? That is one of the major questions of shtaros. Is it just an umdana? We assume that. How did it arrive in the hands of this woman? How did it arrive in the hands of this purchaser, or whatever the case may be? It must be that there was a proper transaction executed, and that assumption of proper execution is sufficient for us. Or do we say that the shtar is in essence testifying on its proper execution? That's again a meta question in the world of shtaros. Okay, but for us that is mostly tangential for today. It's a very important question for shtaros, but let's return to the Rav Chaim. So, we're now in the third paragraph. It begins with the word vihine. Vihine al kush yosov harishona yesh lomar. On his first question pertaining to edos kiyum, here's what we can answer. Tehalo mahani mipiksavam, because mipiksavam is not going to disqualify the ede kiyum. Why? Because hurak le'inyan din hagodas edos. Tehalo mahani mipiksavam hurak le'inyan din hagodas edos. The only case, and again, this is classic Brisker analysis here. Where is there a problem with mipik savam? When does the halacha tell us that they can't have testimony mipik savam from a ksav? Only on hagodas edos. What is hagodas edos? The moment where they come in and testify. What Rav Chaim is telling us is as follows. Again, this is a nuanced distinction. He's saying that ksav does not ruin the edim. It ruins the hagodas edim. It doesn't ruin the witnesses themselves. It ruins their testimony. Now, ordinarily, that would just sound like a game of semantics. What does it matter if it's ruining the witnesses or ruining the testimony of the witnesses? The answer is, where would it make a difference? In the context of?
If those witnesses came to testify.
That would be a problem. But where would there be a difference between disqualifying the witnesses and the testimony of the witnesses? In the context of Eidos Lekiyum Hadavar. Go back to those witnesses on the Kiddushin itself, right? Do they need to testify anything? Is their role to testify? Their role is just to witness, just to be present for the Kiddushin. So that might be a theoretical case where you need witnesses, but you don't need testimony of witnesses. Is that necessarily the case? Again, we'll get into Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar Be'ez Hashem at a future point. But the assumption of Rav Chaim here, and this is again an assumption that we'll challenge, but it's important to note, is that when it comes to Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar, you don't need testimony, they just need to be present. And therefore, he says, a shtar would indeed work, because a shtar is only a problem as far as Haggadah's Eidos is concerned. He continues, to be biksavam lo chashiva, third line, Haggadah klal, because when they write, that is not considered Haggadah, it's not considered the offering of testimony. When it comes to Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar, the halacha that you need Eidim present, not that you need Eidim to testify, but just that you need Eidim present, that has nothing to do with offering testimony. We only need witnesses to be present. So he says that would work for Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar. It would work. The whole problem with Peaks of them is only on their delivering testimony, but they would still be considered present. That's Rav Chaim's first Chiddush. He goes on to note that you'd still have a problem regarding the second fact, because, again, the witnesses on a get aren't only there for Eidos L'Kiyum HaDavar, they also serve as a raya as well. When do they serve as a raya? Again, she comes into Beis Din, she wants to remarry, they ask her, where's your proof that you are eligible for marriage? And what does she do? She hands them a get. In that instance, the get is being used for proof, for testimony, for Haggadah's Eidos. So he says that that answer is not going to suffice. We're going to skip the remainder of this paragraph, because again, it gets a little nuanced. But then he offers his yesod in the next paragraph. V'nira lomar. It appears to me, he says, Tihine be'emes hare mevur be'kitten daf ayin aleph de'edos piksav be'tela me'ach drasho de'mipiem lo mipiksavim. He says, really, Eidos itself, not just Haggadah's Eidos, not just offering testimony, but Eidos itself is undermined when it is bichsav, when it is in writing, rather than actually verbally offered and based on. Upashut de'einzes sozer ledin shtaros te'eduson bichsav kayemes. And nonetheless, that does not undermine this whole world of shtar, whereby the testimony of a shtar works. Why? Mishum, fourth line of that paragraph, Dishnei dinim heim. Classic Prisker terminology here. In Yiddish we would say, Tzvei dinim. There are really two different operative principles that are going on here. Eidos bichsav psula, written testimony, that's disqualified. Ve'eidos habishtar, kshera. But eidos in a shtar is kasher. Now once again, that seems like semantics. Eidos that's written down is puzzle. Eidos in a shtar is kasher. What Rav Chaim is effectively telling us is these are indeed two different things. There is something that makes a written document, it transforms it from written testimony, which is no good, into a shtar, which is good. Now, what is it that transforms this written testimony into a shtar? Once again, that's a major discussion among the Rishonim. And again, the you have to look at the Nosei Kalim on the Rif, and Yevamos Daf Tes B'Dapei HaRif, and Tosas and Ksubas. I mentioned some of these Maamar Komos last week, and Ksubas Daf Chaf. There are lots of different opinions, but Rav Chaim is going to tell us what it is for him. Uvzeh gam haRambam sover kein. He said the Rambam also agrees that if something is a shtar, then it works. It's not subject to this problem of mipiem alom ibiksavam. Perakta im banu ladun ezo mikria edo shebishtar. But if you want to determine what exactly qualifies as a proper shtar, bezecho le karambam. This is where the Rambam disagrees with the Ramban. Besvirale de ein shtar ela masha naase le kinyan. Critical line of Rav Chaim. What is a true shtar according to Rav Chaim? Only a shtar Kinyan, not a shtar raya. Going back to our paradigms from before, there could be two types of shtaros. Maybe I didn't explicate this clearly enough before, but once again, there could be two types of shtaros. One shtar is only a shtar raya. It is a shtar that serves as proof. I lend you money, and we draft up a document asserting that I lent you money. That document is only needed as proof that the transaction occurred. The transaction itself happened totally independent of the shtar. There are other instances when an acquisition is done through a shtar. One of the modes of acquisition for a piece of land is shtar. I don't know how many, were any of you around when I did the buyback on the chametz that we did at the end of Pesach, one of the modes of acquisition that we use is shtar. We use a whole host of different modes of acquisition when it comes to mechiras chametz, because there's a major machlokas as to which forms of acquisition work for nachrim, work for non-Jews. But one of the forms that we use is a shtar. There's a transfer of a written document, which we fill out, that's handed over from buyer to seller, and it's through the handover of that shtar that the land is actually acquired. There's a transaction happening through that shtar. The shtar isn't only there for proof. It's there to effect a change in halachic status, namely the change in ownership from seller to buyer. That is called a shtar kinyan, and according to the Rambam, it is only that shtar kinyan that is a true bona fide shtar. Every other shtar that's a shtar raya is only going to be what? Is only going to be midrabanan, because of mipiyim lo mipiksavam. Rav Chaim continues. This is 7 lines down in that paragraph. A shtar, a true shtar, is only one that effects a change in ownership or status. What would fit into that category? A shtar of kiddushin, which effects a change in status. A get, which effects a change in status. A shtar of shechur avadim, a shtar through which you free an eved. A kinyan, a shtar through which you make a monetary acquisition. Those are all true bona fide shtaros. De'ika alayhu din shtar mi divrei Torah. That is a true shtar on a de'oraisa level. Aval masha nasa rak l'raya. But if you have a shtar that is only a shtar raya, it only serves as proof. Then, according to the Rambam, it is not a true shtar. Ella, what is it? Eidos bichsav. It is written testimony. Does written testimony work on a de'oraisa level? Absolutely not. Why? Because of the drasha of mipiem, belo mipiksavam. It doesn't work. Ve'al kein pasul behu mipiksav, mipiksavam. Therefore, it is pasul when it is written. Ha'omnam ki das ki gam das haRambam hare ikaron shel shtaros hu rak b'masha nasa midas ha'meschayev. Again, he's using loaded language here. We'll unpack this in a moment. The Rambam also agrees that a true shtar can only be done through the das ha'meschayev. In other words, if I am losing a piece of land through a shtar, I'm acquiring it to you. The shtar is only effective if I agree to the terms of the shtar. In other words, the person who is being harmed by the shtar in Beis Din needs to agree to its terms. Otherwise, I could draft up any shtar I want at anybody else's expense. So the person who is, in theory, losing by the shtar, if this shtar is going to be used in Beis Din to prove that you purchased land from me, then I had better agree to that shtar, and I had better agree to its terms. So it needs to be das ha-meschayev, u'chadas kol ha-rishonim. Everybody agrees that you need das ha-meschayev. Al mikol makom zehu din bifnei atzma delo chayel din shtar rak hecha shenasa lekinyin. He says, the Rambam has an additional requirement that it needs to effect a kinyan. If it does, it's just for a raya. He says it's only midrabanan that it works. Then three lines up from the bottom, including that small line. But real shtaros that are used for a kinyan, Rambam says that if it is a true kinyan, like a get or like a shtar kiddushin, then even the Rambam agrees that it is midoraisa. Okay? And that's his explanation. Wait 1 second, Zal. He goes on to, again, go into several additional pages of analysis, but that is Rav Chaim's basic yesod. The Rambam holds that a shtar kinyan is midoraisa, a shtar raya, a shtar that's only used for proof, is midrabanan. Okay, a very important yesod of Rav Chaim, and it's a paradigm that I want to keep us to all keep in mind as we move to our next topic. Not a fully next topic, but our next subtopic within the sugya of shtaros. Before we get to that, Saul, go ahead.
So further up, he said that the shtar is an example. He gives kitten and kedushin and shemurim and kinyan.
Mm-hmm.
What does he mean by kinyan? What are you talking about?
So again, so let's say there could be two different forms. Let's say I'm selling you a piece of land, okay? The sale can, there can be two types of shtaros that we use on that sale of a piece of land. One option is, let's say, you pay me. And the mode of kinyan is what we call kinyan kesef. You acquire it through kesef. That's the kinyan that we use. Then we draft a shtar to prove that that occurred, just so that you have that shtar so you can show it in Beis Din. That's called a shtar raya. It's only there for proof. There could be another instance where, let's say you're not liquid. Okay? So you're going to owe me the money because I am selling you the land, right? But we can't do it through Kesef because you're not liquid right now. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to draft a shtar, and I'm going to hand that shtar to you. And it is through the handover of that shtar that the karka becomes yours, that the land becomes yours. You're going to owe me the money later. But it's through that mesiras hashtar, it's through that documentary handover that you take ownership of the land. That is called a shtar kinyan. And that's what Rav Chaim means when he says kinyan.
Is it just talking about a note or a mortgage? Is that really what we're talking about?
I have no idea. What are we talking about?
Mortgage is for land, and note is for buying that book. I owe you money to...
A note?
You're going the other way.
Like a promissory note?
Yeah, it's a deed. A deed is a kinyan.
Yeah, that's good. A deed. Let's go with... A deed is something different?
Saul, you'd be writing the note to him, though.
I'm not talking who's doing it to
you. No, but you're acquiring the karka by him giving you the shtar.
We're getting into territory that I'm unfamiliar with in terms of, like, again, the secular legal terminology. Why would it be different from a deed? A deed sounds right.
Yes.
A deed transfers the title of the property. The mortgage is the thing that obligates me to pay you for the...
But that's a shtar
for the property.
So it's almost like
there's a contract and a deed.
Right, it's two pieces.
It's both.
No.
A deed is the effectuation of the contract.
If a deed is effectuation of contract, then a deed is a shtar kinyan. Analogous to a shtar kinyan.
Correct.
But I would get it, and I'm sorry to drag
it. No. Again, this is helpful, yeah.
If I paid you in cash, and I would get a deed if I gave you a mortgage.
Correct. So again, in secular law, we don't have formal maisa kinyan the way we have formal maisa kinyan in halacha, right? But again, but if it isn't...
Wouldn't you have a sales contract consideration, Saul?
Sales contract?
Yes.
Is that separate from a deed?
But that would happen in both scenarios.
Then, when I pay you for it, you will give me a deed that shows that I now own it.
But Saul, that would happen in both scenarios, like you said.
Based on the terminology that we're using here, it would appear to me that a deed is analogous to a shtar kinyan, and a contract of, what was the term you used, Carl?
Sales contract.
Sales contract would be more akin to a shtar raya. Why? Again, I'm not confident in that assertion, but...
I hand you money for your land.
Yeah.
You give me your land. You give me a deed. That shows me that I owe the land.
Until you have a deed, do you own the land?
Nope.
No,
then
you signed the contract to buy your
then house. The deed is a shtar kinyan.
But if I come to you and I say, I don't have the money, here's a promissory note that I'm going to pay you the money, you then give me the deed.
Then it's still a shtar kinyan. It's still the deed that has affected the transfer.
So then I'm not understand, and we can move on, but I'm not understanding the nafkamina between the kinyanim that are shtaros and are not shtaros. I don't understand.
Again, but you have to, again, in halakhic, it's not a perfect parallel because apparently, again, what I'm learning from this conversation, and you see how deep my understanding of basic, I don't know if this would be contract law is, right, exactly. But it appears to me, from what you're saying, that in our... Is this a federal legal system? Is this a state legal
system? It's a common law legal system.
Common law. Let's go with common law. That in common law, the only way to effect a transfer of real estate is through a deed. Yeah. Which means that we're saying, again, if we would put that in halakhic parlance, the only possible maisa kinyan is through a shtar. That is not true in halakha. The Mishnah in the first paragraph of Kiddushin outlines a number of ways through which you can effect a transfer of ownership, including you don't need any shtar at all. You don't need any shtar at all. So that's where it's not perfectly parallel. So in theory, there could be cases in halacha where you become the owner just through the monetary transaction. And no deed, no shtar needs to be written at all. If we would elect to write a shtar in that circumstance, it would only be as proof that the transaction took place, but it would not be the document that effects the transfer. So it would not be a deed. It would be a shtar raya. Right? Okay? Good. Tov. Okay. Now. Let's turn back to our question of Edei Chasima and Edei Mesira. So we only have 9 minutes. So today I'm gonna pose a question that hopefully we'll begin discussing, and we'll see how far we get. We will continue this. I'm gonna try to make it work next week if I can. Again, not Monday night, but Bezra Hashem, we'll try to figure out a night that can work. But let's at least begin a conversation about Edei Chasima and Edei Mesira. So you will hopefully recall. That we saw a major machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir, a very, very important machlokas, as to who the key witnesses on a get are. Rabbi Elazar said it is the Edei Mesira, the Edim that witness the actual handover of get from husband to wife. They witness the transaction, they are the key witnesses. Rabbi Meir said it is the Edei Chasima, in other words, the Edim who are signed on to the get. If you want a mnemonic to remember it, I can tell you how I remember which shita is which. Each side only gets one mem. If it's Rabbi Meir, it can't be Edei Mesira. It has to be Edei Chasima. Rabbi Elazar holds Edei Mesira. Okay? Good. Thanks. Ari, does that help? That is helpful, right? Only one mem on each side. I know somebody's going to come up with some problem with that. So we're just going to go. We're just going to go Viter. What? A starting mem. Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, David. I knew someone was going to poke a hole in my theory. Okay, here we go. Fine. That is the machlokas. Rabbi Elazar says Edei Mesira. Rabbi Meir says Edei Chasima. Fine. That was the machlokas. We're going to come to a shita of the Or Zarua that is quoted by the Hagos Ashri. He quotes a machlokes. We're going to see the machlokes, and I will ask you which side appears to be correct, and as always, how can we explain the other side? What might this machlokes hinge upon? Let's just see what the machlokes is, okay? The Or Zarua, it's quoted by the Hagos Ashri, quotes a tshuva of Rabbeinu Simcha. Heshev Rabbeinu Simcha. Get shalom chasmu ha'edim b'ksav yadan. Let's say you have a get. The sofer is there. He's drafting the get in front of two witnesses. And the witnesses decide, hey, we don't actually want to sign. My hand is really tired. I have carpal tunnel. I don't want to get ink on my fingers. Whatever the case may be, I don't want to sign. So what happens? Ella has sofer chasma. The sofer says, how are you called up to the Torah? What's your name? He says, okay, shkoyach, I'm going to write your name. And how are you called up to the Torah? You're Yitzchak ben Avram. Okay, great. You're Reuven ben Yaakov. I'm gonna sign you both, assuming that they're not related. I'm going to sign you both onto the shtar. I'm going to write your signatures, and that's perfect. Good. What is the halacha in that case? So says the Hagos Ashri, quoting the Or Zarua again. This is after the first bold passage. Afilu l'Rebbe Meir, even according to Rebbe Meir, to Amar Edei Chasima Karsi, Rabbi Meir, as we know, is the one who approves of the Edei Chasima, the signed witnesses. Lo Hava Mezuyaf Mitocha. This is not a problem. The sofer is allowed to sign in place of the Edim themselves. That is the Shita of Rabbeinu Simcha. And he proves it. How does he prove it? Underline. To me, the Rabbi Elazar Nishma Le Rabbi Meir. I'm going to prove it to you from an analogous case from Rabbi Eliezer's Shita. Rabbi Elazar's Shita. What's the analogous case? Kihechi del Rabbi Elazar, according to Rabbi Elazar, Mishta ikra de'ihu ba'i lemichtav, when the Torah says, v'chasav la sefer karisus, what is chasav referring to? It is referring to, according to Rabbi Elazar, it is referring to the ksiva, the actual writing of the get, not the signatures, because again, Rabbi Elazar approves of the Edei Mesira, so it refers to the writing of it. Fafilu hachi, even though the Torah says that the husband needs to write a get, what does the husband ordinarily do? Does he ordinarily write it himself? No, he ordinarily outsources it to a sofer. So third line, Baal mashvi shliach l'ksiva. The Baal can make a shliach, a messenger, to write it. For omer l'sofer ksov get l'ishti. He can tell the sofer, please write up this get on my behalf. Therefore, the Rebbe Meir Nami. I can apply that same logic to Rebbe Meir. What does Rebbe Meir hold? De Amar, quote, V'chasav, Rebbe Meir holds the word, V'chasav in the Pasuk does not refer to the writing of the get. What does it refer to, rather? Edei Chasima Ka'i, it refers to the signing of the get. Because again, if you recall, we saw that according to Rabbi Meir, the writing of the get is immaterial. The actual written get, you could just find anywhere. You could find a pre-printed get. What's critical according to Rabbi Meir is the signatures. So just like for Rabbi Elazar, you can outsource the critical step of the chasav. The Baal can have the sofer write the get. So too, Rabbi Meir holds, you can outsource the critical step of the chasav. Bold, second bold passage. Im yom rulo sofer chasom shmenu. B'chasmo, kosher. If they tell the sofer, sign our names, just like according to Rabbi Elazar, the Baal can say, write it for me. According to Rabbi Meir, the Edim can say, sign it for me. That's the argument of Rabbeinu Simcha. He concludes, again, this is after the second bold line, kiven the chosmin lefanav, because they, after all, signed it in front of him, the Baal nos no le'isha lefanenu, kosher, and everything else is properly done, is properly executed, he gives it to the Isha, so therefore it's perfectly good. That is the view of Rabbeinu Simcha. Skip to the bottom paragraph. Says the Or Zarua, be'ein nira be'einai klal. This seems ludicrous to me. Elokol haget she'edav einam chosmin, Biksab Yadon, he's a puzzle gummer. So you don't have the signatures of the witnesses themselves? Somebody else forged their signatures, and you're going to tell me that that's a good get?
It's not forged. I mean, it's not forged.
Somebody, they didn't sign it themselves. They had somebody else sign it. Yeah. And that's...
It's consent.
Don't worry, you can write my name.
Okay, let me avoid the word forgery. They didn't sign the get. Lemaisa, they didn't sign the get.
Correct.
Ari, your alumnus is on par with my high school students from a few years ago. That's like, you know, it's a good alumnus. It's a good alumnus. But they didn't, Lemaisa, they didn't sign it, says the Or Zeruah. Ari, you're agreeing with Rabbeinu Simcha, Lemaisa, and we're going to have to break down the machlokas in a moment. But the Or Zeruah is saying, absurd. How can you tell me that a get that doesn't actually have the witnesses signed onto it, somebody else signed their names, how in the world is that going to be kosher? Kedemuchach Ba'orach, he says, it's clear and evidently, I can explain at length why it's puzzle. And he adds, Imbam Maisa Liyadi Ani Poslo Miyad, he says. If somebody tries to bring me that homework assignment, they try to bring me that get, he says, my Bezdin is not being machshir that get. It's not going to be good at all. My question to you is, what is the machlokas between Rabbeinu Simcha and the Or Zeruah? What is it that they're arguing about? I'm sorry? Okay. In other words, so what is Rabbeinu Simcha saying, and what is the Or Zeruah saying?
The one who says that the signature is not good is saying that it's not a riot.
The key is Mesira, let's say. Yeah.
The one who says that the signatures are good is saying just a riot.
Right there.
Wait, hold on. Wait one second. The one that says that it's good holds Raya, and the one that says it's not good holds Mesira. I would have said the opposite. I would have gone in the opposite direction.
That's what he meant.
What did he say? I missed that. What, the other way around? So that's, okay. I would have said the other way around, but I think you're hitting on a critical point. Let's take a step back before we get there. Okay, let's take a step back before we get there. Whenever we have a machlokas, and we'll invest more in this machlokas next week, we'll try to explain it, and then we'll unpack its broader ramifications. But I think Danny's analysis is very much on point. The question for us, whenever we have a machlokas, Rishonim, certainly a machlokas in the Gemara, I've said many times, that's always a stop sign. Because I assure you that the two deos, Rabbeinu Simcha and the Or Zeruah, didn't just flip a coin and decide that the get is kosher or pasul. There's obviously some logic behind each side. And whenever we see a machlokas, if we're learning it on some kind of substantive level, we can't just say, okay, shkayach, it's a machlokas, and move on. The goal for us becomes to try to understand what the respective perspectives are. That's step number one. Step number two, in analyzing the machlokas, it's often very helpful to start with the view that is more intuitive, and then try to explain the alternative view. That's a very useful way of going about things, because very often you intuitively associate with one side, then you have to explain the other side, and very often once you explain the other side, it challenges your initial intuitive assumption such that you need to come back to your first opinion and explain that. Which opinion is more intuitive here?
The fact that shouldn't be good.
I would have said the Or Zeruah. I would have agreed with the Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah is outraged. How in the world can this work? He says, the Edom aren't really signed on it. It can't be good. So what is the logic of Rabbeinu Simcha? Fortunately, in this case, Rabbeinu Simcha tells us what it is. He brings a raya based on an analog between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar holds that you can outsource the ksiva. He holds that you can outsource v'chasav. So what, Rabbi Meir should also hold that you can outsource the ksiva, that you can outsource v'chasav, which for him refers to the signatures of the Eden. The task for us is going to be, where does that raya fail, at least according to the Or Zeruah? It seems like a pretty logical construct. Mid Rabbi Elazar, Nishmal Rabbi Meir. Just follow the parallel, and it should be perfectly good. Clearly, according to the Or Zeruah, that parallel falls apart somewhere, and Be'ezr Hashem, it is up to us next week to figure out where exactly it falls apart, and we'll, Be'ezr Hashem, continue to explore this topic then.